Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Are you ready to take your business to the next level? Every day there are countless books and articles that are published offering the key on how to make your business a success. It's easy to feel overwhelmed trying to keep up and run your business. That's why Deb Creer created the Business Power Hour. Keep up on the latest trends, best practices, and techniques for how to make your business a success. Let the Business Power Hour do the heavy work for you.
Good morning, good morning. I am Deb Creer, and I am passionate about giving professionals the tools that they need to make themselves and their businesses as successful as possible. And today, holy cow, we are going to talk about one of those success stories. We're going to be speaking with Brian Clayton about his company and how he started it from scratch and how it is now this absolutely phenomenal service that he provides, and you know, the bumps, the hiccups, and all the positives along the way. So please join me in welcoming Brian Clayton to our program today. Welcome, Brian.
Deb, thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
Great. Well, let me tell people a little bit about you and then we will dive into this. So Brian Clayton is CEO and co-founder of GreenPal, an online marketplace that connects homeowners with local lawn care professionals. GreenPal has been called the Uber for lawn care by none other than Entrepreneur Magazine and has over 200,000 active users completing thousands of transactions per day. Holy cow, like I said, very successful. So again, Brian, welcome.
Thanks for the great introduction. That was awesome.
You know, it's always fun when we hear our own bios. We're like, woo, we like that person.
Sounds interesting.
I know. And it is interesting. So tell us, I always like to find out from our guests how they got to where they are today and how you discovered that this is your passion in life.
Yeah. I'm a lifelong entrepreneur. I've never had a job. I've always worked for myself, always had my own business, and I guess luckily so. But GreenPal is the Uber for lawn mowing. So If you're a homeowner, you need to get your grass cut. Mm-hmm. Rather than calling around on Facebook or Craigslist or Yelp, you can just download our app, pop in your address, and you'll have somebody who's reliable and at a good price come out and mow your yard for you. I guess you could say GreenPal is like a 9-year overnight success. Mm-hmm. My two co-founders and I have been at it for almost a decade. Mm-hmm. Started off very humbly building the app from scratch and getting the little marketplace going and have launched it city by city in the United States over a long period of time. And now we're nationwide in the United States where anybody, if you're in any city in the country, you can just push a button and get somebody to come cut your grass for you. Self-funded. We haven't taken on any outside capital. We've kind of just built the business off of its own revenues. And now we're 9-10 years in and have a good, profitable, growing business doing $20-30 million a year in revenue.
Right.
And before GreenPal, I actually had a lawn mowing business. I started mowing grass when I was a teenager just to make extra cash, and all through high school, all through college, mowed grass to pay my way through school. And after I graduated college, I decided, well, let's just see how long I can take this business, how far I can take it. And over a 15-year period of time, ended up building one of the largest landscaping companies in the state of Tennessee where I live, eventually getting that business over 150 employees, over $10 million a year in revenue. And in 2013, that business was acquired by one of the largest landscaping companies in the United States. And then I kind of rebooted. I went through a period of self-reflection.
You're in the, now what the heck do I do?
Yeah, story. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I had the idea for GreenPal. I was kind of solving my own problem. But luckily, I didn't know how hard it was going to be. It was kind of naivete as an asset. And just put my head down, and my two co-founders and I went to work and It wasn't about 3 or 4 years until we actually had something, but we never gave up. And that's one of the reasons why we're here today is just perseverance and grit has got us to where we are today, where we have a good, profitable business that's growing fast.
Great. I love it. You know, and it is one of those things where you saw the need and you filled the need. But I also love that it wasn't an overnight success. And I think that's one of the things that many small business owners struggle with is they think, hey, we've got the greatest thing since sliced bread. Why aren't people just flocking to our doors? So tell us about, you mentioned that, it kind of took a while. What were some of the bumps along the road that you guys hit?
Yeah, if you build it, they will not come. That is one of the things I learned is that you're right. I was kind of solving my own problem. For 15 years, I ran a landscaping company. I saw it from every angle you could see it. And I saw how inefficient it was. And then you see what Uber and Lyft and Airbnb are doing. You're like, yeah, you know what? That could exist for what I know.
Right.
And so when I built the first version, my two co-founders and I, it was crickets. We released it and it was just dead on arrival. And one thing we realized was when you're building a brand new product from scratch, you're inventing something brand new, you have to innovate on the problem and the solution. That's important, but that's only 50% of the battle. The other half of the battle is innovating on distribution, innovating on marketing, and innovating on how the hell you're going to get customers. And so I learned that the hard way right out the gate was, wow, we spent all this time building what we think is a good product, but now we have to spend just as much work or maybe even more in how we're going to market it, how we're going to get the word out, how we're going to hustle up our first 100 people to try it out. And that was very much a trial and error process. It was very much one where we started small and we just decided, I thought, okay, if we can just get 100 people to use it, and then if I get 100, I know I can get 1,000. If I get 1,000, I know I can get 10. And that's how we got in there. We just we just started doing everything we could to get the word out. The first thing we did was we passed out flyers all over Nashville and like 100,000 of these things and ended up getting 100 people to use the product. And then after that, we met as many of them as we could and learned from their from their feedback. And then we applied that to figure out, okay, this is how we're going to get 1,000 and this is how we're going to get 10,000 and just working our way through kind of maybe the levels of the game. And little by little and celebrating the small wins is how we got to where we are today.
You know, and it's interesting because one of the things that I tell people, because I'm a marketer by trade, by heart. And so I always say, you know, you have to figure out who your target audience is. And you actually have two, because you have the people who use the service and then you have the providers of the service, the contractors. So how do you deal with having two very different types of people you're trying to reach?
You're right. We have two customers and we have to satisfy the desires of both at the same time. And it's challenging. You know, anytime you're building a multi-sided marketplace that connects buyers and sellers, it seems like it'd be a simple thing to do, but the reality is they kind of have different interests. And you're trying to build a product that brings them together so they can conduct business in an easier way than they could normally. And so that was one that we just do a trial and error process, try to figure it out little by little and focus on just one thing at a time. And so in the early days, it was kind of like it's a chicken and egg problem, and we kind of faked the chicken almost. The first five service providers were people that I reached out to personally, and I developed a relationship with and said, "Hey, listen, I had one of the biggest landscaping companies in Nashville, and they kind of knew who I was, and I sold it." Which doesn't happen all very often. And so the first 5 or 10 or 20 contractors, they knew me.
Right. You went to your buddies.
Right. And I said, "Hey, listen, I'm building this thing and you know, I don't know if it's going to work or not, but would you use it? Would you submit pricing when people need it? Would you show up and do a good job?" "Yeah, sure. I'll try it out." And then in exchange, I would give them free coaching and mentoring on how to grow a landscaping
business. Oh, okay.
That was kind of how we kind of hand cranked the supplier base in the early days. And then that enabled my team and I to focus on just a couple of things. Okay. How do we build a product that consumers will enjoy using, get value from, and keep using? How do we figure out what their needs are and how do we solve them with technology? And then kind of like almost put the supplier side on pause just for maybe a year or two. And so hand cranking one side to where you could focus on the other side is how we did it in the early days. And then once we got that side okay, then we came back, okay, now these are the tools that suppliers are telling us they need. They need better quoting tools. They need better route optimization, better scheduling. They need to get paid quicker. They need to make sure that when they show up that the gate size is the right size and their mower will fit. Like all these 100 problems we then began to get exposed to and it's kind of ping pong back and forth solving whatever the biggest problems were on our plate that week. And a lot of times when you're building a brand new product from scratch, you're triaging. You're just, you know, you got a 100 problems, but you can only triage.
Yeah. You have to figure out what your priority is.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And that's how we did it. Mm-hmm. And when you're self-funded, meaning you're building the business off of its own revenues, it kind of like focuses you on a very simple like clarity of these are the two or three things we need to focus on now, nothing else. And that kind of adage that necessity is the mother of invention is very real when you're building a business and funding it off of its own revenue. So that's how we did it. And it's like we didn't worry about like the million things that were wrong. We just focused on one or two things at a time and tried to like pause everything else and did that over and over again over a decade. And now we've got a good product that people can just push a button and reliably get this chore done.
You know, and it's interesting because as you were talking about this, I was thinking, you know, there is another company that's very similar to what you do. It's called Amazon. You know, it's got buyers and it has sellers and it's matching those two together, you know, and as you said, figuring out along the way. But, you know, they also knew start small and only add when you can, you know, and I mean, can as in should, not, oh my gosh, we should add. And then you get so spread out that you don't know what you're doing. And, you know, love or hate Amazon. I mean, you know, I'm one of those people, if there's not an Amazon box in front of my door, at least once a week, they come and they knock and they want to make sure I'm fine. But you know, it is, and I think one of the things that people don't understand, you know, with companies like Amazon, like with what you do, is it really is. There's so many small businesses that are part of it.
That's right.
And this is a way for them to get their product, their service out there. You know, and especially, you know, like with a lawn care company, you know, so many of them are very, very small. I mean, I'm assuming you might have some, you know, some that you deal with that really are one or two person type of shops, all the way up to, you know, some fairly big type of companies. But yeah, you know, the little guys, you know, they're not even at the spray and pray type of marketing. They're going around putting flyers on people's mailboxes.
Right.
You know, and so to be able to centralize this, that helps. You know, and so tell us a little bit about the process. So if I, you know, so I'm looking at your website and I won't put it in as we do this, but it asks for your address. And so if I type my address and then click see prices, then what?
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly how it works. And to take to your point with respect to Amazon, they got started in just books. Mm-hmm. And so if you're an entrepreneur,
out of the garage, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, if you want to be the next big thing, you kind of have to really focus on what can I be the best in the world at? And what can I really do better, 10 times better than anybody else or any other way to get it done? And that's what we've done with lawn mowing services. You know, we don't want to be the best way to get a house cleaner or the best way to get a pool service. We're the best way that you can get a lawn care service come mow your yard for you. And we've learned a lot from the big guys like Amazon. You know, Jeff Bezos, his quote is one of my favorite quotes from him, is that the thing he loves about the consumer is that they are always discontent. And for me, like, I love that because like that discontent that the consumer has is what drives the innovation. And so we've learned a lot from the big guys like Amazon and applied it to our little thing that we're doing. And the thing that Amazon did was they taught the masses that you can get things done and solve problems through an interface on a phone or a computer. And we've kind of had to be Amazon good for lawn mowing. So as a homeowner, you literally, we have to remove all the friction between you and getting your lawn mowed, mm-hmm. and we make it as easy as possible. You come in, you put in three things, your name, your email address, and your home address. Mm-hmm. And then you start getting quotes for free from lawn mowing services nearby you that are looking at your property through aerial imagery and street mm-hmm. view imagery. And then they're reading about, okay, well, this is the average lawn mowing price in this zip code, mm-hmm. and this is how many square feet the lot is, and this is how often they want it mowed. And mm-hmm. all of this is kind of handled in minutes rather than like this normal, like go mm-hmm. back and forth phone calls and voicemails right. and emails and text messages, like all right. of this.
So
is
from the consumer, oh my gosh, you know, yeah. I'm not making those 15 phone calls.
That's right. You just push a button. Now I've got mm-hmm. five quotes. Now I can read reviews, figure mm-hmm. out who I want to hire. Boom, I hire them. They come out the same day or the next day, mow the yard for you. You get a picture of the completed work. Everything mm-hmm. looks good. You just push to pay. Mm-hmm. And then you just push another button and set it up for the whole season for weekly or every 2 weeks okay. lawnmower. So it's literally like we help you with the introduction, the mm-hmm. pricing, make a good, reliable hire, and mm-hmm. then you can set it up and just set it and forget it. Mm-hmm. And like that end to end, like I don't know anybody. My grass is 4 feet tall. Now my grass is nice and manicured mm-hmm. and I've got somebody to take care of this for mm-hmm. me, and it happens invisibly, is what we're in the business of doing. And mm-hmm. and 99% of that magic is below the surface. You don't mm-hmm. even see all the things that go into mm-hmm. making the magic happen. But that's where we've gotten to in a decade. And in the early years, it was really, really clunky. It mm-hmm. you know, the guy or gal you hired didn't always show up, or they didn't mm-hmm. always do a good job, or they changed their price after they looked at mm-hmm. it, or, you know, the million things that can go wrong. Mm-hmm. We've over time figured out, okay, this is how we adjust for it. This is how we improve the product. This is how we solve that problem. And little by little have solved 100 or 1,000 things that can go mm-hmm. wrong with getting this chore done.
Mm-hmm. You know, and you mentioned, you know, somebody, they like the service and they say, okay, come monthly or, you know, every other week or whatever it is. Then how do they change the service? So, you know, maybe they say, it's end of season, I need aerated, or somebody come clean up all these leaves, or something like that. Do they go then through you, or do they then at some point, are they talking directly with the vendor? You know, how does that work?
Great question. So we are not in the business of becoming your lawn care service. So okay. we help you.
You're kind of that matchmaker.
We introduce you to a really good service. Mm-hmm. You get that chore done. Mm-hmm. And then after that, all of these other yard maintenance services mm-hmm. you're going to need, we make it really easy to hire that same contractor for okay. them too. So if I'm the lawn mowing service you hire, mm-hmm. after I mow your yard for the first time, mm-hmm. I then have this workflow that I go through. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. Deb's yard, okay, how much is it going to cost to trim her shrubs, mm-hmm. clean the gutters, seeding, mulch, mm-hmm. Keep the weeds out of the beds, all of these other services you're going to need downstream. Mm-hmm. The contractor then quotes those to you. So they're kind of like on the shelf for you, so okay. to speak, where you can then add those on to your lawn mowing visits as time goes on. Mm-hmm. And then we also kind of nudge you. It's like, hey, you know, it's fall.
It's fall. It's time to do whatever you do to lawns in fall.
That's right. You're going to need seeding, and it's going to mm-hmm. be, you know, $280. You're going to need leaf removal. It's going to be $80 per mm-hmm. visit. Do you want to go ahead and schedule these things? Mm-hmm. Like, you can then push a button and get all those things done. Mm-hmm. The lesson we learned the hard way was to put all of these things on the front door mm-hmm. when you come to the homepage is a mistake, because if it does right. everything, it mm-hmm. does nothing. So right. we kind of had to like get you into the workflow mm-hmm. with the routine lawn mowing. Mm-hmm. And then as time goes on, layer all these other right. yard maintenance services on. Mm-hmm. That's the balance that works well for mm-hmm. us. It's like you can't be all things to all people mm-hmm. Right out the gate. Like right. you look at like
it's confusing.
It's confusing, mm-hmm. and you're not Amazon, you're not Airbnb, mm-hmm. you're not Expedia, mm-hmm. you're not this big, huge thing. Mm-hmm. So you can't have a product that does 100 different things. Mm-hmm. When you're first getting started, you have to have a product that is the best in the world at mm-hmm. like one or two things. And that's been our strategy. You know, mm-hmm. we're the easiest, fastest, cheapest way to get a reliable lawn mowing service mm-hmm. to come cut your grass nationwide in the United States.
Right. You know, and you just said something that I think is so absolutely critical for people who are, you know, whether they're just starting out in business or have been doing it for a while, is pick a couple things and focus on those. And it's hard when you're the small business owner, because you want to, you know, I kind of mentioned target markets, but you want to please everybody. So you've got the people who, you know, need a little onesie twosie thing, or, hey, can you do this? Can you do that? And first of all, you want the money, But, you know, second of all, you want to please people. And so it's really hard to say, you know what, this is all that we do.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, you've obviously found, you know, ways to be able to do that. But if somebody asks you that question, you know, how, you kind of answered that, but you know, if they say, you know, oh, but Brian, you know, they want me to do this and they want me to do that. What do you say to them?
Yeah. So I think it's like it's an ebb and flow. Like so let's say you have a service-based business and you know, you're a roofing contractor, you're mm-hmm. or your home remodeling service or your mm-hmm. home cleaning service or marketing agency, whatever. Mm-hmm. And this is your first 6 months in business or your mm-hmm. first year in business. Mm-hmm. That first year is very different. Like that level of the video mm-hmm. game is very different than level 6, 7, 8, and 9. So
right.
in that first year, you mm-hmm. kind of do have to keep the lights on mm-hmm. and you kind of do need to do whatever it is you can mm-hmm. do to not have to go back to your cubicle job. Mm-hmm. And you kind of have to be all things to all people mm-hmm. for maybe 6 months or a year, or maybe even 2 years, just to kind of get in the game, mm-hmm. get some revenue going mm-hmm. and figure out what kind of business you're right. even in. Mm-hmm. And then as time goes on and maybe you have a home cleaning service and you're like, you know, what I've done everything from like single family homes to apartment mm-hmm. complexes to car dealerships to hospitals or whatever. And it's like, now I really have figured out that I am the best in my market mm-hmm. at cleaning apartment complexes when mm-hmm. they go vacant and getting that unit ready. Mm-hmm. I can make the most mm-hmm. money at that. I'm better at that than anybody. And my crews is good at mm-hmm. that. And I'm going to double down and go all in on just that mm-hmm. one thing. And then after the first year, maybe you can say, hey, I'm sorry. We don't do residential cleaning. Mm-hmm. We only do multifamily. Mm-hmm. And, but here are three or four other people that do that. If you hear of any multifamily mm-hmm. work, please send it my way. And then you can really focus on that mm-hmm. one niche and that one thing and be the best in your market mm-hmm. at that. So it's like, I think a mistake is new entrepreneurs are like, nope, this is the only thing I'm doing. And I'm not doing anything else. Mm-hmm. And they don't get any traction on that because
right.
they didn't even really know.
And then it's frustrating and they quit.
They quit. That's mm-hmm. right. So first year, you kind of have to be all things to mm-hmm. all people to keep the lights on. Mm-hmm. And then, but as time goes on, you're starting to measure and observe that I'm able to keep this type of customer mm-hmm. longer. I'm able to make more profit and mm-hmm. margin on this type of use case. I know how to market it. I know how mm-hmm. to talk these people's language. I have a better value proposition mm-hmm. in this type of use case. Then you double down and you build mm-hmm. the processes around that one type of use mm-hmm. case. And so it's like, you come out the gate, all things, all people. And then as time goes mm-hmm. on, you're the best in the business at this
right.
one thing.
Right.
That's how it's unfolded for mm-hmm. me over 20 years mm-hmm. of starting two businesses right. from scratch. It's like, nail it, then scale it.
Mm-hmm. I love that. You know, I have a friend who did the same thing. He was a contractor. You know, you wanted something done, he would do it. You know, anything and everything. You know, and now he did kind of focus on residential, but I mean, that's still a huge market. As time went on, and he has now found his niche, and I mean, it's a fabulous niche. He only does, and it's like you said, he has other people he refers to if he can't do this, which is fabulous, because then you're not turning business away.
Right.
You're helping. So it's kind of that win-win situation. But he now only does insurance repairs.
That's right.
And he said, you know, he discovered, you know, several things with that. First of all, it's very limited in scope.
Right.
You know, if you know, insurance company will pay for A, B, and C, and he gets paid by the insurance company, you know, or you know, he gets that check, and so
right.
you know, that's a very fixed rate. He goes in, he quotes it, he says, you know, we will do this for this. If the homeowner wants something different, then he can decide. Okay, we're going to do this. So you know, maybe it's that they, you know, their kitchen flooded. Insurance is going to pay for, you know, a basic level of repair, but they want the granite countertops and the fancy things. Well, then he can decide, okay, we're going to do this, but you know, here's the difference to the homeowner. You know, and so that's really given him flexibility, but it really is, you know, his market is very small and very finite, and he is very busy. I mean, that
yes.
was the other thing, was once he found that niche and he became very good in that niche, people knew to turn to him. You know, they didn't just call anybody and say, oh, hey, can you do this? They knew, call this guy.
Yep. And he probably learned that after being all things to all people mm-hmm. for a year mm-hmm. or two. Yep. Like, I'll build your deck. I'll fix mm-hmm. your garage door. I'll build your doghouse mm-hmm. if you want it. You know, it's like you learn these things as you, mm-hmm. but you got to get in the game. You got to mm-hmm. get in the trenches. Mm-hmm. You have to get in there and figure these things mm-hmm. out. That's the only way you learn mm-hmm. anything. You want to learn real estate investing? Go do real estate mm-hmm. investing. You want to learn how to build a service-based business, mm-hmm. start a service-based business. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the only way to learn this stuff, is to get in there mm-hmm. and actually start doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, I see this a lot, where folks will just spend a year just reading every book and listening mm-hmm. to every podcast and going to conferences and never actually do anything.
Right. Because they're scared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like, that's when things get real. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, when your service or product touches mm-hmm. its first customer, mm-hmm. that's the only moment when it actually becomes real. It's mm-hmm. it's like nothing else matters until you get something mm-hmm. in the hands of customers right. and start figuring it out from that feedback. Mm-hmm. Everything else is just almost like a waste of time. Mm-hmm. And as simple advice as that sounds, this is the mistake that most people, including mm-hmm. myself, make, is they hide behind the computer screen. Mm-hmm. They hide behind whatever it is they think is actually getting them closer mm-hmm. to the goals. When in fact, it's like, get in the ring mm-hmm. and start like sparring, start mm-hmm. fighting, because right. nothing else matters until then.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and what's really important is exactly what you said. You know, you have to start. And it will not be perfect. You know, you mentioned that, you know, you spent a lot of time learning, and you still do, I'm sure, you know, from, you know, I everybody thinks, well, what if we fail? Well, you know, so, you know, and obviously there are things like, you know, don't mortgage your house.
Yeah, right,
you
right, know,
there's,
right.
there's a lot of key things that you need to do on this. But at the same point, we all need to learn from our failures.
Yes, you know, that's right.
And it's just, yeah, you know, that's the only way to get any better.
You don't have to go for broke mm-hmm. and you don't have to, like you said, mortgage your home. Mm-hmm. And if this doesn't work, I'm destitute. Mm-hmm. It's not like all in or all out. It's, mm-hmm. it's both. You, mm-hmm. you can literally like give yourself a safety net mm-hmm. and not have, like, if it doesn't work, you're not mm-hmm. like destitute. And, mm-hmm. and, but on top of that, the only way to learn is from that experiential mm-hmm. wisdom.
Right.
It's kind of like a couple of things that have occurred to me in the last two or three years. I've tried to learn two things. I've tried to learn MMA, like Muay Thai fighting. Mm-hmm. I have a coach that teaches me Muay Thai boxing. Mm-hmm. And then I've also tried to learn salsa dancing. And so these are two
skills. Oh, now that's about as opposite as you can get.
Right? These are two skills that I've spent the last two or three years practicing. And there's one thing I've learned from both of them. It's like, the only way to learn how to fight is to mm-hmm. spar. And right. the only way to learn how to a martial art is to get in there and spar with an mm-hmm. opponent. Mm-hmm. You can read all the books mm-hmm. and you can watch all the stuff on YouTube. But when it comes down to like getting in the ring, you right. better have had some sparring. Mm-hmm. And so,
yeah. And this, yeah, when somebody hits you, it gets real, right?
That's right. Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the nose. Mike Tyson. And so, mm-hmm. and then the only way to learn how to something like salsa dancing mm-hmm. is to actually get mm-hmm. on the floor and try it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you've taken the classes, you've watched the stuff on YouTube, and you have some technical like training, but the only time it comes together is when you get on mm-hmm. the floor and try it. And so what's the cost of failure? Well, you look like an idiot, but you can still get back out there and try right. again. Mm-hmm. And business is kind of like that. Mm-hmm. You get out there and you fail on a small stage mm-hmm. over and over and over again, and that's okay. You just keep mm-hmm. going. You're not ruined for it. Mm-hmm. But the only moment in which you're going to learn is when your service or your product mm-hmm. touches the customer's hands, mm-hmm. and then they tell you everywhere you suck. That's how you learn.
Right.
And,
mm-hmm.
and it'd be kind of like going into an MMA fight, mm-hmm. never having sparred.
Ooh.
It is how a lot of people try to start a mm-hmm. business.
And then when they're on the floor going, uncle.
Yeah, right. You know? Exactly. That's how mm-hmm. it's going to end every time. Mm-hmm. So get something in the hands of customers, mm-hmm. get feedback. And however like humbling it is, that's okay. It's mm-hmm. not what you're getting. It's what you're becoming mm-hmm. through the process. And that's how you get into the game. And that's how you get through that first year or two, because mm-hmm. those are going to be the hardest.
Right. Yeah. You know, and it is, there is a point where you do have to kind of jump. I remember when I started my business, which is Wise Women Communications, oh my gosh, like 25 years ago. It was, you know, it was great. I found a need, you know, all those various things, but I kept my day job.
Right.
Now, part of it was I loved what I was doing. I was a lobbyist. That was very different world, especially 25 years ago. You know, and but I loved what I was doing. More importantly, I really, really liked the people that I worked with and worked for. But I had this kind of side thing going and all of this. And I met with a business consultant and she told me some really good things. But the thing she told me was I had jumped off the diving board and then was hanging by my fingernails. And until I let go, the business was not going to be successful.
Right.
Having the conversation with the guys and telling them that I was leaving was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done. Because like I said, I liked them. I liked what I was doing. And they were very supportive. I mean, they were like, oh my gosh, oh, we're so sorry to see you go, but what can we do to help you be successful? And sometimes that happens and sometimes it doesn't. But I think we've seen that a lot, especially during the pandemic, with people who kind of started the side gigs or they had the hobby and people started paying them for whatever they were doing as the hobby. Now, I mean, there are certainly a lot of people who do multiple things at the same time. But if you really want something to be successful, at some point, as my dad would have said, you have to either fish or cut bait. You can't just keep thinking, I'm just going to do a little bit. If you only want to do a little bit, obviously that's what you want to do. But if you really want to do this, then you have to be all in.
I agree. There's a motto that I like is leverage, don't leap.
Mm-hmm.
Leverage the last year, 2-3 years mm-hmm. of experience and maybe a little bit of money that you've put mm-hmm. up. Like you said, you went nights and weekends for a while before mm-hmm. you went all in. I mm-hmm. think that's smart. I think it's mm-hmm. smart to do that and test the waters a mm-hmm. little bit for a year or two mm-hmm. before you quit your day job, mm-hmm. before you quit the full-time gig. My mm-hmm. two co-founders did that when we started GreenPal. Mm-hmm. For 3 years, they were nights and weekends mm-hmm. until we put up a little bit enough money to where we felt comfortable mm-hmm. with them quitting their jobs. So mm-hmm. I think it's like in so many things in business, it's not or. It's like, oh, you just jump off the, mm-hmm. the cliff and hope to build the airplane on the way down. It's like, maybe you hedge your bet a little mm-hmm. bit and you de-risk it a little bit mm-hmm. by going part-time for a while mm-hmm. and set like a cutoff. Like, mm-hmm. okay, if I don't go all in by 12 months from now, 18 mm-hmm. months from now, then I'm not going to do it.
Right.
And set a goal with the timeline, mm-hmm. but do leverage the time maybe where you're nights and weekends mm-hmm. on the thing, and maybe give yourself some breathing room, put mm-hmm. some money away because mm-hmm. you're gonna need some money to sustain yourself. Do mm-hmm. whatever it is you can to get that done. Like it's almost mm-hmm. as if your life depended on it mm-hmm. because you're gonna have to buy you some breathing room. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks are just stuck because they've got credit card debt or house. Mm-hmm. House mortgage or car loans and things of that sort, and they have to have a full-time job mm-hmm. just to keep it all afloat. There's going to be like an intense period of time where you're going to have to like really, really put in the work to buy yourself some breathing room, like your life depended mm-hmm. on it. Then you can make the big jump, mm-hmm. let go of the diving board, so mm-hmm. to speak. It's not like this thing where you just jump off the cliff. There is preparation leading mm-hmm. up to that leaping moment.
You know what's down below.
That's right. Yeah. Leverage, don't leap. Because mm-hmm. a lot of times, you leap, you already know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to be even more bitter and in a bigger hole than you're in mm-hmm. now. So it's like, yeah, you have to have the courage, but you also need to really lay the groundwork for whatever it is you're mm-hmm. trying to do and set yourself a goal and a timeline to get there to the starting point.
Right. And I have kind of a sad feeling about what's going to happen in maybe the next year or so, because we had so many people because of the pandemic that, either voluntarily or not voluntarily left their jobs. And they thought, okay, I'm going to start my own business. I'm good at X, whether it was a product or a service. And the problem was they had to make it work right away. I think we're going to see that a lot of people have gotten, as you were saying, a lot of debt that they have racked up. More importantly, I think a lot of them didn't actually understand what it takes to run a small business. Some of the just basics, incorporating, I still have people that I deal with, and it always kind of amazes me, but I understand, and they're usually small type of businesses who say, just write me a check and write it to my name. I'm like, yeah, which, okay, whatever. my tax attorney would just have a conniption fit if he, you know, every, you know, but you know, and yeah, taxes, I mean, all of those various things, and know some of the other basics. I mean, you know, are you, how are you going to invoice people? What is your pricing even going to be? I mean, right. You know, just all of those things that as we've kind of done this, you know, as you and I did, kind of the part-time-ish type of thing, we had all of that in place. Then when we had to say, okay, now it's time, we knew what we were leaping into.
Right, right. And you know, it's at times in the journey, having your back against the wall is a good mm-hmm. thing. And a lot of these folks, you know, are going to come up against that moment. But mm-hmm. but I'm always just baffled as to, like, we're not taught how to start a business or how to run a business mm-hmm. anywhere in mm-hmm. school or college. Even right. if you go to business school in college, mm-hmm. you're not taught mm-hmm. things like customer no. service, time management.
They don't even, you know, they don't teach people how to open a bank account
and basic and, bookkeeping, yeah. what mm-hmm. any of this stuff is or means. It's like mm-hmm. you're always indoctrinated like by fire. And so like, if you're willing to learn it, the good mm-hmm. news is you can learn anything, especially mm-hmm. today. You know, when I was starting my first business in the late 90s, we didn't have YouTube University. Mm-hmm. We didn't, no podcast ever existed mm-hmm. anywhere.
Right.
We didn't have blogs.
Oh, I started before there were really, I started almost before the internet. Oh my gosh.
There you go. 20-year overnight success. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you know, the point is that in business, you're going to be doing three things at once, particularly mm-hmm. in the early years. You're going to mm-hmm. be working in the business. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to be just wrangling everything, mm-hmm. making sure everything happens. You're going to be working on the business. Mm-hmm. You're going to be trying to build the processes and the routines. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to be working on yourself, mm-hmm. which is learning things like basic bookkeeping, right. mm-hmm. learning things like maybe you want to test Facebook ads and what mm-hmm. that means and how to pop up a Facebook campaign. You're going to be learning things like basic management, basic mm-hmm. leadership, learning things like around how to figure out what your value proposition mm-hmm. is and how to understand how to do basic copywriting. And so you're going to be working in the business, mm-hmm. on the business, and on yourself mm-hmm. for a long time mm-hmm. and making gains in all of these buckets. And that's how you kind of go from mm-hmm. zero to now I have something. Right. I've got a profitable little mm-hmm. business going. And I think it just comes down to just, are you willing to do it, do mm-hmm. the work and do the work on yourself and mm-hmm. make the sacrifices? And the ones that are will make it, and the ones mm-hmm. that aren't will have to go back to their right. employer with their fail time.
Yeah, I think we're going to see in, you know, a year ish, all of these job vacancies will get filled.
Yeah, they will. Mm-hmm. And we had a grand experiment within mm-hmm. in terms of universal basic income mm-hmm. In this country, and I don't think it played out as well as we mm-hmm. thought it would. You know, right. Like, you know, at the end of the day, people need to feel and want mm-hmm. to be productive. And so I think you're right. We'll go back to a mm-hmm. sense of normalcy. It's a weird time right mm-hmm. now though.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
I mean, have you been to the grocery store? Everything's $100.
I know. I have to go this afternoon. I'm like, you know, is my credit card going to go on me?
It's crazy.
You know, and that is, you know, I think that's, it is, it's going to take a little bit longer. It has been very interesting to watch yeah, and
it
to
really
see,
has.
You know, because we have seen so many people that have gone off and done their own things. You know, I always kind of laugh when people say, you know, oh, I can't find a job. Really? McDonald's is hiring at $20 an hour. Makes you think, oh, I'm going to go work at McDonald's.
My hot water heater went out. And so I have spent all morning calling plumbers and every one of them cannot get to me for 2 weeks.
Oh, I know.
And one of them said, had a phone answering mm-hmm. service said it's going to be 23 minutes before somebody can get to you. So mm-hmm. yeah, there's a big bottleneck in terms mm-hmm. of demand and supply mm-hmm. right now. It will level out, but mm-hmm. it's funny to see how this experiment has taken.
Oh yeah. You know, and I think this is a time where, you know, whatever age you are, but for a lot of people in their, you know, late teens, 20s, absolutely have got to be thinking about trade school. You know, it's, I mean, hello, you're a great example, but
absolutely.
You know, I heard on the news this morning that we are short 60,000 truck drivers in the yep. United States.
Yep. And here's the thing. I know so many millionaires mm-hmm. that are in the landscaping business.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And you, and these are folks that have spent 10 mm-hmm. or 15 or 20 years just mowing mm-hmm. yards.
Yeah.
And they take the money that they spent, that they mm-hmm. make in this in this trade, mm-hmm. and they put it in the more durable sources mm-hmm. of income, like right. real estate, investments, yeah. mm-hmm. and just that simple mm-hmm. thing of provide a mm-hmm. service in mm-hmm. terms of a trade, whether it be mm-hmm. a plumber or a roofer, mm-hmm. and provide that at a mm-hmm. profitable margin, mm-hmm. take that money, put it to work right. in real estate. That's just a winning mm-hmm. strategy to be financially independent in 10 years.
Yeah.
Not hard to do.
No. Well, you know, like the truck driver thing. I mean, they were talking about minimum salaries that were over $60,000 a year. And yes. a lot of these kids, and you know, it was a news story, but they were talking about a specific training school. They said most of those kids have job offers before they ever even finish. So they're not even having to go out to look for jobs. The employers are coming to them, and for some people, you might not want to do whatever it is for the rest of your life, but it's a good thing to get you from here to there.
When I was mowing grass, and when I was a teenager and all through college, mm-hmm. I knew I didn't want to be a lawn guy the rest of my mm-hmm. life, but I saw a lane that if I could right. just make this two or three or four times mm-hmm. bigger than it was, that mm-hmm. that I could build something meaningful. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's correlation between the least mm-hmm. glamorous your idea, mm-hmm. the least sexy it is, mm-hmm. whatever you're doing, the greater your chances of success. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of folks don't want to get started in a business because they don't want to be seen at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And this is something relatively new in the last 10 or 15 years with mm-hmm. social media. They don't want to be seen at the bottom by their peers. Mm-hmm. And we have a tremendously fast feedback loop in terms mm-hmm. of social media.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. These days. It didn't exist when I was first getting started. Mm-hmm. And so I think that fear of being seen at the bottom and mm-hmm. being seen doing something that is not prestigious or glamorous mm-hmm. holds a lot of people mm-hmm. up to getting started in something that mm-hmm. that could free them
right.
from the job mm-hmm. that they hate to go to every day.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it really is a lot of it, as you were saying, was the perception. You know, they don't want to be the person who gets, you know, dirt under their nails every day and right. and does all of this. But you know, that person with the dirt under their nails goes and gets in their Jag and drives home. it's like, well, maybe. But you know, and
so true.
I have college degrees. I, you know, support that, all those things, but you know, it is one of those things where you need to think about it. And I think as a society, we've gotten into that. Oh my gosh, you have to go get a 4-year degree. You have to come out with a boatload of debt. You have to, you know, have all these things. And, you know, so many now things have changed a lot from when I was in college. My undergrad degree is in social sciences.
Nice.
Yeah, you do diddly squat with a degree like that. You know, and now, you know, you can get college degrees in very, very specific areas, which I love. You know, I'm like, wow, you get a degree in that. But at the same point, is as you were saying, you know, there's all that other stuff that has to come in there, you know, how to start the business, how to do all of those things. And, you know, it'd be nice if schools combined all of that. So you would have kind of this overarching educational system. Hey, let's start a new business. We got this, Brian. We can start this new business. It's going to be an overarching education, right? It's going to teach them everything they need to know. And some will come out and have dirt under their fingernails every day, and some will be bank presidents. But, you know, whatever it is, they'll know, you know, how to get from A to B to C to D.
Yeah, I think in most cases, college and decision to go to university is in most cases a consumption decision, not an mm-hmm. investment decision. And right. so it's in most cases, it's not an investment in yourself mm-hmm. and in your career. It's 4 years of an mm-hmm. experience and to party and goof mm-hmm. off in 90% of the examples that I observe. Mm-hmm. And it's particularly when I went
to college. And you get degrees in social science.
Yeah, I went to school. I went to college just because I felt like I had to, mm-hmm. but I was still growing my business at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I remember really clear, like my friends were all joining fraternities and mm-hmm. they all wanted to like have the fraternity like mm-hmm. experience in school. And I remember telling one of them, I said, listen, I'm gonna build this business. And they were like, well, because I'm in this fraternity, I'll have all these business connections. And
right.
I'll come mm-hmm. and I said, listen, I'm going to build this business. I promise you'll never catch me. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of an arrogant thing to say, but that's how it unfolded. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, these guys never caught me because when mm-hmm. I graduated college, I had a company.
That you had a paycheck coming in, a big paycheck.
I was doing $700,000 a year in revenue, and no, they never caught me. And I think a lot of times, if you're gonna not go to college and not do anything with those 4 or 5 years, you're probably better off going to college. At least you have something. Mm-hmm. Right. But if you're going to, instead of going to college, maybe go to YouTube University and learn something like conversion rate optimization and build a boutique marketing agency around conversion rate optimization, I promise your peers will never catch you. If you spend 4 years just in that one thing and build an agency just in that one thing and really work your butt off, you'll be set. And so that's kind of the decision, you know, when it comes time to like, am I going to spend 4 or 5 years in college? Well, if you're not going to do anything, go to college. But if it's going to be, I'm going to start a business, start the business, because you'll learn more starting the business.
And, you know, if you are in college, be thinking about what it is that you're going to do. I mean, you know, and it's always interesting to me when I talk to a junior and they tell me their major is undeclared. I'm like, what? And now I can understand maybe as a freshman, you don't know. And so, you know, you take your math, you take your English, you take all of those things and you get them out of the way. But yeah, by the time you're a sophomore, you should know what you're doing and you should be taking classes that are specifically going to get you towards that career. And add to it, you know, maybe you are getting a degree in one thing, but you're going to take some business classes.
I agree. You know, I agree 100%. And one other thing I'll add on top, and it's in this same vein of kind of discussion, is that there's this myth, I think, that's being perpetuated right now, that your 20s are just a decade of self-discovery and don't worry and about it. And don't worry about it. And like nobody had it figured out in their 20s. And this just kind of just let the time pass and figure out who you are. And maybe that's true, but in my experience, no. Like your 20s is you've got to build a foundation to where your 30s and 40s are going to take you in your 20s. If not, you're going to wake up, you know, 35 years old and just be getting started. And this game is exhausting. You really need to spend your 20s laying the groundwork. Anybody listening to this is in your 20s. You really need to be laying the groundwork for how you're going to like get to third and fourth base on in your 30s and 40s. And don't listen to the common belief that not to pick on like Gary Vaynerchuk or some of these other people, but they're selling you a myth. They're selling you something that sounds good. But the reality is that no, your 20s are an important decade to lay the groundwork for whatever the heck it is you're doing.
You know, and not to sound like the old curmudgeon, that's also when you need to be saving, you know, and doing all of those things. You know, and because, yeah, you know, then, I mean, that's why we are seeing people in their 50s and 60s who are able to retire.
That's right.
They started investing when they were young.
That's right.
You know, and I mean, you know, can you catch up? Well, it depends. I mean, you know, it depends on what you're doing. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, for so many people, it's interesting to see what they're doing and how they're doing. And I have a young friend who, you know, I don't have kids. And so I always keep telling him, remember me. Hello. Remember me. and you know, nicest, sweetest, young man in the world. But I mean, he started selling things. I've talked about him on the program before. He started selling things on eBay when he was like 6 years old. I mean, he was one of those type of people. He started in traditional business school. I mean, it was, you know, and he went, oh, this is not for me, because it was far too restrictive. And so he's now doing all sorts of other things. But he's still taking online classes. And, you know, if anything, you know, there were obviously lots of bad things with the pandemic, but a lot of good things. I mean, one of the best things that has come out of the pandemic is the ability for online learning far more than we were ever doing before. And I have a friend that said she took classes from Harvard just to say she took classes from Harvard. But, you know, to be able to, you know, maybe it's not going to lead to a degree, but to pick and choose from all these different universities throughout the world and take a class here and there. I mean, you know, maybe you want to do something that's international. Fine. Take some classes in some, you know, some either international studies or from some actual international type of universities and be doing that. And again, thinking, okay, here I am 18, 19, 20 years old. What do I want to really be when I'm in my 50s and 60s? I still don't want to be you know, having to grind every day.
Yes.
I want to be able to enjoy myself.
Yes. Let that scare you. Mm-hmm. And that always scared me when I was in my early 20s, when I was at, you know, working 14 hours a day mowing yards. I let that fear of 20 years from now, I'm still going to be doing this same thing, scare me into making decisions like investing in real estate, investing in others. And there's such smaller companies in terms of equities. And so that is enabled me. I retired at the age of 33 and I didn't have to work anymore. And so that's what enabled me to start GreenPal was now I want to do the company I really want to build, because I spent 15 years doing things I didn't initially like doing. And I think that's lost on a lot of folks getting started now. And the other thing is, you know, to your point in terms of online learning, you can learn any skill you need to learn online now.
Right.
You know, and
from anywhere. I mean, I take LinkedIn classes, you know, or classes on LinkedIn, I should say, that aren't about LinkedIn.
Yes. But let's say you wanted to learn how to be the best marketer on TikTok, you know, and you could learn how to do that. You could, if you spent a year doing that versus 5 years going to a traditional school, you will be more valuable in terms of actual skills that you can sell to start a business or start an agency for. And so I think that's time better spent. And nowadays, like, what a great time to be alive. You can learn any of these things from people who are doing it for very, very, for in most cases free or for what you spent on Uber Eats last week.
Yeah. And to be able to do it virtually. You know, I'm one of these, part of the reason I do this podcast is because I get to learn every single time. You know, there, every guest I have, I learn something from. And so it's so much fun over the, you know, I think your program 724-ish, you know, so I've been doing this a while.
Awesome.
And, you know, but I like that process. And so I've been thinking about, there's it's a relatively new type of program. It's a law degree, but it's business focused. And
Ooh,
you
like
don't
that.
Pass a bar. I mean, you're not practicing law, but you're learning business law, and it's all virtual. It's just to kind of, you know, I've signed up, I get the emails from a couple places and all sorts of things, but yeah, I mean, these are world renowned programs that I could participate in and, you know, do it from this chair.
Yes. Yes. And in business, you're going to have to be good, like 80-20 good at a dozen things. And law and legal is one of them. You're going to need to like come pretty close to getting a law degree if you're going to be in business for yourself in terms of learning just the basic in and outs of how to be a consumer of legal services. And so like that kind of thing is awesome to me, that you can take 3 months, 6 months and get 80% good at law and never have to go to law school. And you can do that same thing for accounting. You can do the same thing for marketing, for copywriting, for leadership, for management. To make it in business and build an eight-figure company, you're going to have to be pretty good at all of these things.
Right. You know, and the other thing that business owners really have to get good at, and I tell them you need to get good at this early, is delegating.
That's right.
You know, and that's the hard part, especially when you're starting out. You know, you know this. It's, you know, first of all, you think I'm the only one that can do it. You know, I'm the only one that can do it right. That's the other key. And you know, plus you're thinking, oh my gosh, I have to pay somebody to do it. Well, you know, you don't always have to pay. There's barters, but sometimes it is better to pay somebody who is the expert. Or even just free up your time. I operate on what I call the 15-minute principle. If it's going to take me longer than 15 minutes to do something, then I should hire it done. You know, I'm big on, I love tinkering on websites. And we build websites, my company does. But I like tinkering and doing. But if it's a project that's going to take me longer than 15 minutes, I need to hire somebody else to do it. Because it's not a good use of my time. And so that's the thing. I'm spending money to make money. And you know, and delegating's hard. I mean, you know, I have a producer for this podcast, and she's absolutely fabulous. We're, you know, getting ready to start our fourth year, I think, of working together. And she does everything she does, I could do. Everything she does, I did do. But she frees up probably 2 or 3 hours a week of my time doing those things. You know, and was it hard? Yes. Oh my gosh. Just to, like I said, to give away that control. But yeah, I mean, that is part of what we learn as we go, is It's okay for somebody else to do it.
You hit on something that you have done, you know, is what you delegate. And that's the thing I think a lot of folks skip is they delegate from abdication. It's like, mm-hmm. I don't understand how to do this. Mm-hmm. You handle it. Usually that's a recipe mm-hmm. for disaster. You have to delegate from stewardship, mm-hmm. which is, mm-hmm. this is how I do it. This is mm-hmm. why we do it this way. This is the process I want you to mm-hmm. follow. Here's the checklist. Mm-hmm. Here's what I expect for you to deliver. Right. Here's how long mm-hmm. it should take and how long it should mm-hmm. cost. You handle it. Mm-hmm. That's how you delegate.
Right.
And I have mm-hmm. made that mistake so many times. Mm-hmm. When you delegate too soon, it's a disaster. Mm-hmm. And then we have scars and we delegate mm-hmm. too late. Mm-hmm. And that just costs us time yep. and progress.
Oh, yeah.
Three books on delegation. And this stuff's really hard, but three books that you should read or that I should probably reread, everybody should read is The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. Mm-hmm. That's all that book is about, is mm-hmm. developing systems, mm-hmm. processes, and how to mm-hmm. delegate. The 4-Hour Work Week by mm-hmm. Tim Ferriss. That book is not about working 4 hours a week. Mm-hmm. That book is about processes and systems and routines mm-hmm. and how to delegate. And then 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by mm-hmm. Dr. Stephen Covey. Mm-hmm. There's a whole chapter in that book about what it means to develop stewardship mm-hmm. delegation and not delegation by abdication.
Right. Right.
Those are three books mm-hmm. that have helped me understand mm-hmm. this is how you delegate the mm-hmm. right way. And I've still done it wrong, usually 75% of the mm-hmm. time. But I when I get it right, it's a big level up.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it is hard if it's something you don't know, like accounting. Yeah. You know, I trust that my accountant is going to do everything that she's supposed to do. You know, and it seems like she does. So, you know, but we all have, you know, and a big part of it is, as you said, you have to know what you want. You know, when I have hired VAs before, it hasn't, you know, I, you know, just said, go, do. Mm-hmm. And they had, you know, bless their, you know, we live in the South, right? Bless their hearts.
Yeah.
You know, they, without direction, they did not do what I wanted. And then of course I was annoyed. Well, why didn't they do this? Well, you know, yep. hello. But when I hired my current producer, I had a job description. Just like I would if I was in a multi-gazillion dollar company, there was a job description. There were tasks that were laid out. I said, you know, here are templates that I have used. You may, you know, change them, to, you know, but here are the basics that have to go in. I mean, you know, all of those various things. And so she was able to go, oh, okay, I can do this. I interviewed multiple people. You know, and all sorts of things. And so I was comparing apples and apples. But she did a really good thing. I obviously love my producer. She was the only one afterwards who sent me an email. Now they all, you know, sent emails. Thank you very much. Blah, blah, blah. They were trained. You know, we all know we're supposed to do that. She gave suggestions to make improvements.
Yes.
And I loved that. I thought, okay, this woman has initiative,
right.
You know, and so that was fabulous. But yeah, it's just, you know, delegating is one of the hardest things we do as a business owner, because, you know, we don't want to lose that control. We think we're the only ones who know how to do it, and we don't want to spend the money on it, right?
Yeah. And it ends up costing you money. And that's the thing that, you know, if you're at 6 figures, you want to get to mm-hmm. 7, or if you're at 7 mm-hmm. figures, you want to get to 8. A lot of what's holding mm-hmm. founders and CEOs mm-hmm. and company owners back is the ability to build out teams and delegate mm-hmm. to people
right.
around them.
Right.
And these days it's in a way easier mm-hmm. than ever mm-hmm. because you can externalize what it is you mm-hmm. want and your thoughts and your expectations mm-hmm. better than ever and record them. Mm-hmm. Like something I use a lot is Loom.com. And it's mm-hmm. just a screen. It's just a screen recording mm-hmm. piece of software. And so mm-hmm. like when I'm hiring a VA or mm-hmm. hiring a new chief of content or hiring a new SEO mm-hmm. lead or something like that, I'll just for 20 minutes, mm-hmm. just be on my screen talking mm-hmm. as if I'm talking to my ideal candidate and explaining mm-hmm. this is what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. And in screen sharing, you see this is not mm-hmm. what I'm looking for. And this is what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. And here's a YouTube video I watched mm-hmm. that kind of lays it out. You know, it's like literally just externalizing all these things and mm-hmm. Loom will capture all of that. Mm-hmm. And then you can share that with half a dozen people and they can kind of get dialed into mm-hmm. what the process is. And so there's so many more tools today that make this stuff mm-hmm. easier. Whereas in 1998 or 2005, mm-hmm. how would you even go about doing that?
Right.
You would literally have to like type this stuff out mm-hmm. on Microsoft Word and
or we hand wrote it.
Ugh. Yeah, and put it mm-hmm. in a 3-ring binder and give them the binder. Mm-hmm. Literally, that's how that these days that stuff's asinine. Mm-hmm. It's so much easier these mm-hmm. days than it's ever been.
Right. You know, and then you add in other things of technology like what we're doing here. You know, we're able to connect. I mean, now we're not that far apart. We're really only about a 4-hour car drive apart. So, you know, but, you know, I interview people from around the world.
Right.
We can work with people around the world. I mean, you know, technology has made things so different, even than they were just 5 years ago. Part of that is the pandemic. You know, everything was forced to accelerate very quickly, but it's great. You know, and it's a great time from a business perspective, because you can hire people from around the world. You know, and it's, depending on your business, you might need to, because you might need to be a 24/7 type of business. You know, you operate in you know, many states, and so you're able to do that because of technology.
That's right. Yeah. And in small, I think every business, small, medium, and large, is going to have to start thinking like a tech startup. You know, even if you're just like, you know, I mentioned I couldn't get a plumber earlier. Even if you're a plumbing company and you're trying to figure out how to market your services better, you need to start thinking like a tech company. You need to start thinking about, okay, I have to hire a chief social media marketer, and I have to hire a chief SEO strategist, and I have to hire a, you know, and you can hire these people from anywhere around the world, but even if you're just a plumber, you're going to have to start thinking like a tech company in terms of what technology you're putting in the business. That's the world we live in today, and it's only going to start accelerating more and more and
Yeah. Hang on. So cool. Well, oh my gosh, Brian, we are at the top of the hour. This has been so much fun. I love hearing about how you went from nothing to this very large company, you know, and it wasn't overnight. I mean, I think that's the key for everybody to remember. But if they want to learn more about your company, how do they do that? And then how do they connect with you?
Yeah, life's too short to cut your own grass. You know, especially if you're in business, you don't need to be mowing your yard. So just download GreenPal in the App Store or Play Store. You get hooked up with a great lawn mowing service in a couple of minutes. Anybody wants to get at me, I put all of my effort in social on Instagram. Okay. Just hit me up there, Brian M. Clayton. Drop me a DM there and I'll hit you back.
And Brian has a Y in it, B-R-Y-A-N.
Correct.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I love it. This has been great. Do you have any final thoughts for everyone?
You know, I saw a quote the other day that I really liked, so I'll share it with you. It was an interview with Mike Tyson, and he says, do what you hate, but do it like you love it. And and he was talking about the rigorous training the routine that he went through and how he became the best in the world. And he said it's because he did what he hated, but he did it like he loved it. He got up at 4 a.m. and jogged every morning and did the 100 sit-ups and did the 5 hours of training a day. And so a lot of times in business, you know, there's all of these things that we hate to do. For me, particularly in the early days, it was cold outreach to journalists and PR. I hated doing it, but still did 100 a day for like years and years and years. And so reframing that task that you hate doing, but do it like you love it, can help you just get through that grind that we all go through as business owners.
Perfect. I love it. What a final, wonderful thought to leave with. I'm Deb Creer. Forgot my own name there for a second. I'm Deb Creer. I've been having a great conversation with Brian Clayton of GreenPal. And until next time, everyone have a great day.
Tune in for our next program for even more trends, best practices, and techniques for how to make your business a success. The Business Power Hour, hosted by Deb Creer, is proud to be part of the C-Suite Network. This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.